can fly you out to Paris. Okay. Buy you some carrots.
And what's up, everybody? Welcome to another episode of Combos with Manny. Today's a special one because last week on our VIP meeting, I decided that it was a great idea to bring on some of the Patreon members, people who are actually supporting this thing from the ground up, and just allow them to tell their story and us just talk about what it is they're going through, the questions that they're going through, so that you guys, the listeners, can hear from the perspective of you. Not us talking to you, but one of you talking back to us, and you guys get to hear and maybe not feel alone in the questions and all the things that maybe you're thinking that you don't always get to, you know, speak back to us while you're listening to the episodes, which really, this is what the purpose of this is. If you, you know, you join with us on the Patreon, which shout out to all the Patreon members. We love you. Thank you so much for supporting us. Doesn't matter what tier you're in, 2, 5, 12, 25, doesn't matter. But we'd love to hear your thoughts, your voice, the things that you go through, questions that you have. And I thought this would be a great way to really get people involved. So today I have Melinda with me. What is up? How you doing?
I'm doing great.
With your green hair. I love it.
It's the color of the quarter, so.
Yeah, I'm with it. So I know, Melinda, how long have you been a part of it?
I believe, actually, I was the first VIP supporter since the beginning.
You are amazing.
Back in September.
How did you find the podcast?
Well, I follow Angela, your wife.
Yep.
And she shares a lot of the things that you would do in your projects. And so then I started following you. And then, of course, you guys launched the podcast. And I didn't start listening right away, but I started listening hardcore basically last year when we all had a lot of time on our hands.
Yeah, for sure.
And so I just kept listening to, you know, episode after episode, and it was really good. And so then when you decided to start a Patreon, I was like, I'm in.
I love it. It's always weird because I don't want anybody to ever feel like I'm trying to sell them. I don't know how to do it. You know, like I hate the idea of trying to sell people on supporting. Like, it's so weird to me. I'm just kind of like, no, if they want to, they will. It was just, you know, whatever, they'll find it.
Yeah.
But a lot of people don't even know it exists and what it's about. But tell me how it's been like being a part of the NATRT family. Cause really this what it's about. I want to know A, your story, and B, if being a part of this family is something that, you know, has helped. So tell the people what your story is, where you were at, and what brought you to where you're at now.
Okay, so I've been saved for about 25 years. And in fact, on our last call, which was just last week, I realized in the middle of it that it was actually my 25th anniversary.
Oh, wow.
So yeah, it's been 25 years. And I was all in. I was going to church. I was serving. That's where I learned how to do, you know, video and graphics. And so I got involved in the production team and, you know, going to Bible studies and doing all that stuff. And did that for several years. I even started working on the staff and worked with them as well as another ministry. And
where was this at?
The church?
Yeah.
Here in San Antonio, Texas. And so then I'm going along, and then eventually the church had some financial hardships, so people had to be let go. I was one of them. And that was actually a blessing in disguise, really looking back on it, because I was kind of burning myself out, and it was just going through the motions and that kind
of
thing.
Sure.
But several years ago, I ended up falling in love with a woman. Mm. And so this is when I basically figured out that I was gay.
Mm-hmm.
And almost immediately, I would say that, I wouldn't say immediately, but I started to feel distant from the church, from my church, because the teaching that they had been, that they've done is, you know, love the sinner, hate the sin.
Right.
And there's always a, you know, there's a but with everything, love them, but, mm-hmm. And I know that I have some other friends who are gay. And when I would talk about that, to the folks in this church, they were like, well, you know, you can't, that homosexuality is a sin and they're sinning, and just basically all that, they were condemning it. And so when I figured it out of myself, I realized and felt that the church didn't love me anymore. But oddly enough, because I didn't necessarily grow up with unconditional love, I still felt unconditional love from God. Mm. Never once did I ever feel distant from him or felt like he didn't love me. So there was that struggle between, I'm like, well, but I have a loving God, but this church is like, yeah, but we don't really like you for who you are. And so I pulled back a lot. And finally, one day I was like, you know, I said, you know, this isn't right. I know that God loves me, and I do need to find a loving church. And I never really felt that from the church that I was going to, even though I tried again and again. And I kind of just finally gave up with that. I didn't know where to go from there. Even though I knew that God still loves me, I just didn't know. So do I keep going to church? Am I going to be accepted to church? Do I need to find a new faith? I don't know. Mm. So fast forward to last year, when I really started listening hardcore to all of the episodes that you guys had. And at the beginning, you know, it was fun and that kind of stuff. And, you know, I forget what season it really started to get deep into talking about church and deconstruction and all that. And it just each episode would just chip away at something that I didn't know I needed, which was that chance to ask the hard questions. You know, God can handle those questions and he encourages those questions. And that's exactly what this podcast encouraged was, you know, you guys knew that everybody out there was having a hard time in life, whether it be with church, whether it be with people, whether it be, you know, family. Mm-hmm. And so you guys asked those hard questions and you answered a lot of them, but you also still left the door open for more questions and then more comments. And, you know, I know that you talk a lot on Instagram. You talk with everybody that wants to talk at you, negative or positive. So,
yeah.
You know, you've always kept that door open and with grace, as I saw it.
I try, you know. I think it's interesting, like when you're talking, I'm like, man, she's saying, and you obviously, since you've been listening from the beginning, I know there was an episode that I did with my boy Jonathan, and it was the first episode where I tackled the church and homosexuality. Mm-hmm. Because before, I was always so scared to, because I've always been honest, you know, about it, that I never had an answer for it. Because prior to knowing anyone that was gay, I was very staunch, you know, I was very whatever. And to my embarrassment, I did not like the old Manny. And then, you know, once I married into a family that was 50-50 gay, I was like, oh man, I'm really going to have to address this. I'm going to have to address how I feel about this.
Yeah.
And at first I did a very poor job at it. And then when I fell in love with the people in my family, it really did change the way I saw everything. And when I'm hearing you talk, and when you're saying, when you were coming to the realization that you were gay and you never felt God's love leave, mm-hmm. I can already tell that's a trigger. It's a trigger to a lot of conservative Christians or you know, people who would say that they're Bible believing. And this is not a diss to those people. This is not me trying to say you guys are stupid. You know, if you're listening and you're being triggered, it's not that at all. I started asking the question, why does that bother me? When it was back in the day when I didn't have the realization of what God's real love was, the question more so was, why am I being triggered? And that's the question that I pose to people now, because I'm like, I remember I did a post the other day about my interview with Kat, and I was talking about sex before marriage and how I understand if somebody would would do that now, you know, like after, you know, if they go through a bad divorce or if they go through whatever, and the second time around before they get married, would they have sex before marriage? And I'd be like, yeah, I totally understand. Totally understand if somebody would. In the same way, I asked myself, because I got some pushback from it, and I'm like, why does it bother people so much? Mm-hmm. Like, why would a statement like, I'm gay and God never left me, or I didn't feel his love leave me, why would that trigger someone? Because I know it does. There's no way it wouldn't, because it flies right in the face of modern day Christianity. And I know, like you said, we like to say love the sinner, hate the sin. But how many people really love the sinner?
Right.
Because what that would mean is, like, most people see that as, in order for me to love you, I'm going to have to tell you that you're wrong. That's how I love you. I correct you. Because that's what love is. I'm correcting you. Mm-hmm. But what happens when you try to correct someone and they're like, no, I feel like God accepts me the way that I am. Then what do you do?
Right.
Because if you peace out, that's not loving them. That's like a spiritual pouting that you didn't get your way. Mm-hmm. And you're looking at this other person and they're confidently saying, I don't feel like God's love left me. Like, I literally feel like he's still here. What does the modern day Christian do with that?
Right. I think what it does is it challenges what they've been taught or believed this whole time. And if this whole time they're believing that, well, first of all, if you're gay, you're not going to hell or to heaven, then they're all of a sudden wrong. And they're like, how can I be wrong when I'm reading from a book that says it's wrong? And
yeah,
that also brings up another point, is that then, well, was the Bible translated correctly? Because when you look back on it, the word homosexuality never came into the Bible until 1946. And that was just based off of a translation among some scholars, some Bible scholars, that actually, when one person challenged them on it and they did more research, they realized that they did actually put the wrong word in. And by that time, the Bibles were already in print, and so it was too late.
Ooh, so, I want to look this up. Where is this at?
So if you go to 1946themovie.com.
Oh, 1946 the movie?
Yes.
I'm gonna write this down.
It is a documentary.
You told me about this before, too. I did.
And that was another thing that I found last summer, was I came across this documentary being made, and it hits all those points that I've always felt in my gut. I'm like, this can't be wrong. And I've even gone back and I'm like, okay, you know, in most Bibles, everything that Jesus said is in red. Mm-hmm. And so I'm reading everything in red and I'm like, I don't see anything about homosexuality. And then you read all four Gospels and that's four different points of view, still written by man, but still four points of view, different points of view. And it's not brought up there either. Mm-hmm. So then you've got these extra chapters where they're talking about it. And it also goes along the lines of what you were talking about last week when you talked about how you're reading that a Jewish Bible, mm-hmm. and the eye for an eye took you for a whole new perspective. And it goes back to the way things were written back then and what it really meant back then. Mm-hmm. So that documentary tackles the word homosexuality, tackles what the word should have been. And I'm really anxious for it to come out and address a lot of these conversations.
You know, it reminded me, because look, I love the Bible. I still read it. I live by it, all that good stuff. I'm learning to, what's the right way to say this? I'm relearning to live by it, trying to get the most accurate perception of this book. Like, I'm trying my hardest to really read it with the intention of what the writers were. And I remember seeing, I don't know if it was a meme, but I remember somebody saying something like this. And it was basically like, why do most readers of the Bible honor the words of the writers outside of Jesus's words more than just Jesus's words. Like, were Jesus's words enough? Like, if we're to model our life after him, there's a lot of stuff that he didn't talk about that we literally make our entire faith based on it. Those are pillars. And I know, again, trigger, I already hear people's ears ringing off. I am not saying that the rest of the Bible is whack.
Right.
I am asking the question, why do I deem Paul's words more important or superseding those of Jesus? Are Jesus's words enough? And I'm asking that question. So again, Bible people, I'm not trying to crap on the rest of the Bible. I'm trying to say, if Jesus is the person that we're following and we're arguing over so many things from homosexuality to abortion, we're 1,000% enthralled in politics, we're 1,000% red or blue, we're bringing all these things into the scriptures when we read it. 1,000% we just are. If we just summed it down to the person that we're supposed to be modeling our life after, then why didn't he talk about these things? Why were these things not addressed? If God is omnipotent and omniscient and all these things, and he foresaw what we were going to be dealing with in 2021, and this book is supposed to last us for the rest of time, why not address the things that we were going to be dealing with in 2021 from his own mouth? He talked about money a lot. He talked about relationships a lot. He talked about how to love people a lot. The people that he interacted with, from women to prostitutes to just not the upper echelon people. Like, he did model a life. But it's not a life that it's not the life that we put as a forefront in modern day Christianity. It just isn't. And I struggle with that, because I'm like, if it was so important, why didn't he say it? And I know the Bible says that if he wrote down everything that Jesus said, there wouldn't be enough books, right? But at the same time, if you believe that this book is inspired by God, then why not say the most important things? If he only had four chapters from, you know, or four books from these four witnesses, and they were walking around with him, they captured what I'm assuming they saw him say a lot, or what they felt was really important to him. If he was talking about homosexuality nonstop, every day, they were bound to say, hey, man, this guy really thinks something about homosexuality, because he cannot stop talking about it. I'm going to write this.
Right.
But it makes me think, was he talking about it that much then? Was he talking about, he gave a couple verses on quote unquote politics. You know, render unto Caesar what Caesar's. Follow the laws of the land. That was it. He didn't tell people how to vote. He didn't tell people how to, you know, it's like.
His main message is how to love everyone. And you know, that's one of the foundations that I try to live on, especially this last year. I mean, I've developed a love for people I didn't even think I was capable of. You know, I feel my little cold stone heart getting a little softer. Yeah. And I believe that that's, you know, based on, you know, going back to the podcast, I think that Knights of the Round Table has given me a lot of building blocks to continue in my faith and continue challenging myself and learning how to love everyone, because we all have that capability. We just need to tap into it and love just as Jesus did. And the that's where I think the majority of what his teachings were, because there's a lot of mention of that in all of the red, and all the stuff that he spoke about was a good majority of about love and how, when you love one another, so many things can be solved. and there's obviously less hate. And I think that's one of the big examples that that you have, in that, like I've said, you welcome those that disagree with you. Mm-hmm. You want to talk to them and you want to hear their point of view. And to me, that's the kind of love that Jesus wants everybody to have. And he wants everyone to listen to one another and to love one another.
I think when I got there was when I was proven. Here's how I got there. And it may sound like we're talking myself up, but let me tell you how I got there. Ready? I've been wrong so many times that I'm now like, man, I don't know shit. I don't know shit about shit. Like, I keep turning out to be a hypocrite, because what I was saying 4 years ago, I'm not saying today. And what I was saying 8 years ago, I wasn't saying 4 years ago. You know, I'm like, man, God, as I live this life and I continue to understand what you're doing, it's like, man, I don't know nothing about nothing. I'm such a inadequate individual, in the sense of, you know, I'm not a scholar. I'm not the smartest guy alive. I'm not any of these things. And you know what? I'm happy that I'm not a Solomon. I'm happy that I would love to be wise. I would love to be all these things. But with those things, not only comes pressure, but comes expectation. Right. And so as I'm stumbling through life trying to figure it out, what I'm realizing is what made me so angry about people being okay with themselves? Why did I need them to agree with me? Why, if these people, whoever's going to listen to this, I hope this is the part that they that gets for our promo. If you listen to this and you hear somebody saying, I'm gay and God loves me, why does it bother you?
Right.
Are you thinking that you're defending Jesus by being angry at the person who is saying it? Do you think that you're some kind of modern day a warrior for Christ because you're gonna come against the gay person and say, no, you're lying. Mm-hmm. That God that you feel that's loving you, that can't be true. He can't love you.
And it almost feels like they think that it's an exclusive club that you have to, you know, check off the boxes to be a part of. And
it's unbearable. I don't know how you can carry that. That you feel at some point in your life that you have become the judge and the executioner. Like, I just know better now. I know better than to tell God how he can and cannot move, who he can and cannot love. Oh my God. The amount of ego and pride you have to start thinking that you can start handing out judgments and tell people how God thinks because you're reading a book that you think you truly understand.
Right.
And then beyond that, that this God cannot change his mind through grace. And this is what I mean by change his mind through grace. Was it Lot that he kept having a conversation with because he wanted to burn down Sodom and Gomorrah? And Lot kept being like, hey, if there's 100 righteous people, will you not do it? And God's like, all right, I won't. And Lot's like, all right, if there's 50, if there's 10, if there's one. He was having a dialogue with God. And God was literally changing his mind. Like, all right, Lot, I get you. You're making good points, you know? Yeah. Like, I think about that and I'm like, man, Lord, I think you're way more human than we give you credit for.
Yeah.
And I love that about you, because it allows me to enter in a lot more unafraid. Right. Because when I thought you were this cosmic God that was ready to just to hand me down an ass whooping for all the things that I do wrong, I found myself acting more like Adam and Eve daily. I was just hiding, man. I kept hiding all my stuff. And now I'm like, man, if he can't love me for who I am, as imperfect as I am, then what is this religion all about? Like, why be a part of it if the God that created me doesn't like me?
There's an old worship song. Actually, old. I mean, it's probably 15 years old, but. There's a line in there that says, you know the depths of my heart and you love me the same. Mm. And that has always struck me, because it's true. I mean, I know that it's been talked about on the podcast where you're like, well, I have all these crazy thoughts. And so, you know, I do sin every day, but it's no surprise to God. Mm-hmm. He knows what I'm going to do 10 years from now. He knows what my life's going to be like. And he still loves me exactly as he did yesterday, today, and in the future.
Yeah.
And I've held on to that. And I feel fortunate that I do have that strong foundation and belief that he always loves me and he always will love me. Because I know that there's people out there that do struggle with that on a daily basis.
Sure.
And my heart goes out to them. But
I have to be honest. Every single time I ask people to send me questions, more than anything, homosexuality is one of the most asked, if not the most asked.
Yeah.
Every single time.
Yeah.
It's very, very, it's very eye-opening for me. It tells me two things. One, or maybe it just tells me one thing, which is there's a lot more people that identify with the gay lifestyle that love God or are trying to love God. Mm-hmm. And when I say trying, they're trying to overcome everyone telling them that God will not love them.
Right.
And as I think about it, I have to think, I don't know why I'm getting emotional right now. I'm getting really emotional right now. I don't know. It's I guess because I'm trying to identify with somebody who, with a group of people who I feel deserve love, you know? Mm-hmm. And I am sorry. I do not know why I'm so emotional. Because I think everyone deserves love, you know? And mm-hmm. I remember how much I struggled thinking whether or not God loves me. But I didn't have a world telling me that he didn't. I was just battling the demons in my own head. So I think about a group of people, no matter who you are, not only dealing with the demons in your own head, but like a whole fucking world telling you that he doesn't. And it makes me think, how brave do you have to be? You, Melinda, how brave do you have to be to shut out not only your own demons, but everybody else, to get to a place of solitude or quietness in your mind to just accept something that was supposed to be free?
Man.
You know what I'm saying? Like, to me, that's really brave. And again, I feel like people may be triggered when they're listening because they're like, I don't care. The Bible says it's a sin. And I'm just like, man, he without sin cast the first stone.
Right.
Don't give me this shit. There's a difference between sinning and living in sin. Like, there is no difference between sinning and living in sin. Like, if you sin, unless you're telling me that you cannot sin, I just don't remember any day that we weren't caught in this state of sin. And this isn't like a political, I hope as you're listening, if anybody's listened this far, this isn't a political podcast. We're not here trying to say, yay, gay, and all of you who disagree, screw you. We're not trying to say that. We're trying to say, if you can get past your triggers, if you can get past your anger and your pious idea of defending a God who doesn't need defense. When the Bible talked about understand the word so that you can give a defense, it meant for you so that you can defend it, so that you knew what you believed. God doesn't need our poor ass excuse for defense. Why would he need unholy people to defend a holy God? He can defend himself. This podcast, this episode is about anyone who has felt on the outside of the in crowd.
Mm-hmm.
And for those of us who at some point in our life may have been the ones kicking people out, to really ask the question, why can't we allow people to work out their own salvation? Why can't we give people room to accept the love of God and be okay with it and not let it trigger us and get us angry? Why can't we just see people as people and be okay with the idea that, hey, maybe God does love all these people.
Yeah.
Maybe he does love everyone. Why wouldn't he? If he said he did. Yeah. And we are the creation. Like, we are it. Like, we are his creation. And I don't think he died for some of us. I don't think he died for some of us.
Right. And that's, you know, as you're talking too, it's like, that's hitting me too, that there's such a large group of folks that do, basically, when it boils down to, say, you can't be loved.
Yeah.
Because of who you love. And I go back to, have you really read the Bible then? Do you really understand Jesus' message of love? I don't think so. Because Jesus loved everyone. And he hung out with those that were cast out. So if that's what he does, and that's what he did, isn't that what we should all do?
And even more so, okay, even more so, if there's still people getting triggered about this idea that we're trying to be pro-gay in the church, okay? All right, cool, if you want to put that on us. What's your sin? Mm-hmm. Are you a liar? Do you cheat? Are you a glutton? Are you an adulterer? What is the thing that you can't stop doing? And how would you like God to then put that against you? If you want to categorize this as a sin, if you want to categorize it as a sin, cool. What sin can you not stop doing? Is it anger? Is it lying? Whatever it is, the thing that you glaze over, that you don't even consider a sin no more because now it's a part of your character. You just consider that as your personality.
Right.
But it's still a sin.
Right.
So what is that thing, listener, that you cannot kick? And now imagine that being the reason you don't get let into heaven. If you want to line this up like that, then let's line it up. Let's line it up. If it's the sin, oh, that's a sin. They're in sin. Cool. What sin is yours? What sin is yours that you can't kick? And you die tomorrow not being able to kick it. And then you get to the gates. Mm-hmm. Oh, sorry. You're a liar and you couldn't kick it. Sorry, you're a glutton and you couldn't kick it. Sorry, you reacted out of anger all the time and you couldn't kick it. Sorry, you were abused and you couldn't forgive the abuser. I can't forgive you. That's what the Bible says.
Right.
How many of you want to serve that God? Think about it. You were raped by so-and-so or by your own father or by your own cousin or by whatever, and you've been struggling all your life to forgive that person. How would you feel if your life was taken from you, unable to forgive that person? I know if you stepped in front of God, any one of us, you would hope to God that grace was real. That even though you couldn't kick this one thing, that God had enough grace for you to accept you. And this is me. I'm using this as the logic of what people would say. Homosexuality, this is a sin. Even though I still reserve the fact that sin is a state of being. I think everybody is in the state of sin, at least according to the word, that we were born into it. When I think about that, I don't have the anger or the animosity or the feeling of, no, I got to correct these people. Because I know in myself, if you're humble enough to know your own sin and accept it, there's a litany of shit that I do that I'm like, God, please, I try so hard to fix this in me. And it gets the better of me a lot. and I would hate to die. I would hate to die on the day that it didn't get the, that it got the better of me.
You're like, oh man.
Yeah. And then I'm like, oh, I tried so hard, but I couldn't kick this in and now I'm going to hell. Mm-hmm. I just can't. I just would hate. I would hate if that were true. Jesus, if you're hearing me right now, I would really hate.
Make a note.
If that were true, I'm trying really hard. Me and Melinda both. And we're trying hard to be good. That's even stupid saying that. It's stupid. Trying hard to be good. If none of us are good. And that's not a woe is me. That's not a woe is me. It's not like, oh, we're pieces of shit. No, no, no. In reality, if you can accept who you are and your humanity, we are not good people per se. Mm-hmm. We are good to the Lord because we're his creation. But we're not good in the sense of, if your standard was good, meaning like you always did good things, most of us are on the line of like average. Like we do good stuff, but we do some bad stuff, you know, like, but we're grateful for a God that has enough grace for the good and the bad. Mm-hmm. God, I got so emotional. I'm so sorry.
Oh man, don't be. I mean, I'm thinking about when you talk about when you get to heaven and you see, you know, God and he's like, well, you know, I can't let you in because of this. You know, I think about the other person who would be on the other end and be like, but look at all the people that I told that they were wrong and that they were sinning and the people that I gave grief for having an abortion. I did all these great things in your name.
Yeah.
And I'm like, but those aren't great things.
Yeah.
You're not loving God's creation, God's child who is going through the heartache of having to have an abortion or is going through a divorce or whatever it is that they're trying to heal from. If you're pointing out the negative part of it and giving them shame, that's not of God. That's not the love that God wants to give them and wants them to feel.
Yeah.
And so I don't understand how Christians can walk around and be so judgmental and shame those that have done things in their eyes that are wrong, not necessarily God's eyes, but in their eyes, they're like, well, this isn't something that I approve of. So I'm going to shame you for it.
Yeah.
And
sent me some before this episode. And it was Oprah was talking about something that this psychologist told her once that gave her an aha moment. That instead of saying, what's wrong with these people? What's wrong with you? Or thinking that way. Oh, what's wrong? What's wrong with them? I can't believe them. The correct question is to ask, what happened? Mm-hmm. What happened to them? Because it's not like some people, I think it's amazing that some people still think that they are the reason that they are who they are. When a majority of what we've become is based on how we were raised. So I don't look at racist people and think, what's wrong with them? I think, what happened?
Yeah.
Because if I was 2 years old and I was raised in a racist house up until I was 14 and I was taught nothing but racism, I would be a racist. You know what I'm saying? It would just happen because this is what I was taught from the people that were supposed to be raising me to formulate the way I see the world.
Right.
And so a better question to understand people is, what happened? What happened in your life that pushed you down the road to think this, to be this, to whatever? Mm-hmm. You know what I'm saying? And not for this, not, don't ask what happened for the sake of trying to find out what's wrong with them. Like, it's not right. Like the secondary question. It's more so for the sake of just trying to understand them.
Yep.
Without the need to point out that they're wrong.
Right.
But just to understand each other.
I've applied that exact line of thinking when it comes to just my own family and my mother and even my dad. You know, it wasn't the most loving and nurturing childhood, so to speak.
Right.
And I think maybe in my 20s, I started to think about well, what kind of childhood did my own mother have?
Yeah.
How did she know how to be a mother? And looking back at her own trauma gave me more empathy and grace for my mom. Mm-hmm. It doesn't change the fact that I didn't get all that nurturing and loving and unconditional love as a kid. It just makes me understand my mom better and realize that she did the best she could.
Yeah.
You know, I'll still have to go through my own counseling and all that kind of stuff. And but it just made me realize that, well, A, my mom is human. Mm-hmm. And she just did what she knew how to do. And so that goes along exactly what you're saying. You know, if you grow up in a racist house, you're going to be racist yeah. until you've been given information that would change your mind. And when that happens, you know, we do better when we know better.
Yeah.
And, I think that that's another thing too, is that if we constantly seek to, well, first of all, being humble is a big step, because when you're humble, like you talked about when you said that you've been wrong so many times, you're like, okay, I'm just kind of done being wrong. And I'm just going to, you know, listen to everybody and embrace that and stop trying to correct people and that kind of thing. So when we're constantly trying to educate ourselves with history, with the past, you're able to understand the present a lot better. Mm-hmm. And I think you're able to empathize and love people at where they're at.
Yeah.
That moment. And
that's important. I did the same thing with my parents. When I just looked at them as a girl and a guy trying to make it, my mom and my dad both alone at 14 years old, having to freaking do it themselves. Dad on the street, mom freaking ironing clothes to make money. That's literally how she made money, was ironing people's clothes. My dad was a straight criminal. Like, I wish I knew that more when I was a kid. So when I was a criminal in my stages, I could ask my dad, like, hey, dad, how do you do the streets better, you know? My dad was a straight criminal and my mom was on their own. And I'm like, no wonder. I'm actually proud of my parents, like how they came out. Because my dad should be in prison. My dad should be in prison and my mom should be in a bad place. But they were able to raise us. I've never, you know, I was poor for a good minute, but I never felt it. And I always felt love from them, as fractured as people as they were. I love my parents more now than ever. And it all began when I just saw them as a girl and a guy. Yep. Just trying to figure things out. And I think when we can dive into our own souls and just see people as girls and guys, just trying to make it, just trying to get it right, like all of us, I think there will be a world of empathy. And I hope that's what you guys heard in this episode. I really do. This has been absolutely amazing, Melinda. I did not expect all these feels to come out, but I'm so grateful for you, and I'm grateful that you're still a part of the fam, and anyone who listens is a part of the fam. But I'm incredibly grateful for you being a VIP Patreon member, because very few people put their money where their mouth is. You know, it's easy to take. And this is not a diss to anyone who's not a Patreon member. I don't want this to come off that way. I'm saying, for me, like, something that me and Ann started doing when we listened to all these preachers online, or when we listen to certain things, we started writing checks to people, because I'm like, man, it's way too easy for me to be taking all this stuff. Like with TD Jakes, like, I would always watch his videos and just taking all this wisdom, but I don't live in Dallas. I don't go to his church. But we started writing checks to TD Jakes just because I'm like, he is helping me so much. I got to write this man. I got to support what he's doing so he can keep doing it. So the fact that you would spend your hard-earned money supporting us, you know, it really does help us keep going. And if I were to be as honest and humble as I can say, it makes me feel that the idea that I had over a year ago that God gave me, is starting this dang podcast, even though I knew nothing about it, how to do a podcast, it made me feel like I didn't miss the mark.
No.
And I'm grateful for that. So Thank you. Thank you for taking time out to be a part of it. I'm going to talk to Jennifer next.
Oh, awesome.
Yeah. So I love you.
That's another thing. Being part of these, groups, when we talk on Sundays, once a month, now I know so many other people from around the States that they're my friends, you know?
Yeah.
Other people is amazing.
It feels like a real church. I'm not lying when I say I'm invested in all your guys' life. So I'm grateful. If you guys are, if you haven't caught on by now, this is Melinda. She's a Patreon member. If you guys want to check us out on Patreon, I'll leave the link in the description, patreon.com/NATRT. We love you so much. Thanks, Melinda. Appreciate you. And I'll see you next month on Sundays.
You will.
All right, girl.